Part 8, Chapter 3. Johnny lay in the dead grass on a knoll and studied the far-off compound through a pair of cyclo-infrared night glasses. He was worried about Chrissy. 2 months had gone by, and he felt their chances were worsening. The only blessing was that the winter snows were late, but not the winter cold, and the wind sighing through the night was bitter. The huge night glasses were icy to the touch. The binocular character of them made them hard to use. The two eyepieces, being cyclo, were so far apart he could only use one at a time. The faint light of the dying moon reflected from the snow-capped peak behind him and gave a faint luminescence to the plain. He was trying to see her fire. From this vantage point, he knew by experience that he should be able to. So far, he could not find even the tiniest pinpoint of it. The last time he had seen her, 2 months ago, he had piled the cage with wood, given her some wheat to boil, and even a few late radishes and lettuces, all from the old women's garden. She had a fair supply of smoked meat, but it would not last forever. He had tried, rather unsuccessfully, to cheer her up and give her confidence he himself was not feeling. He had also given her one of the stainless steel knives the scout had found, and she had pretended to be amazed and delighted with it, and the way it could scrape a hide and cut thin strips of meat. In all these 2 months, he had not heard from Turl. Forbidden to go to the compound, having no radio contact, he had waited in vain for Turl to come to the base. Perhaps Turl thought they had moved. True, they had put an emergency camp near the mine site down in a hidden valley. They had moved extra machines, supplies, and the 3 shifts for the load, and one of the old women to cook and wash for them. There was an abandoned mining village there, and it was a short flight to the load. The efforts to mine the vein were not going well. They had driven the steel bars into the cliff and tried to build a platform, but the wind, meeting resistance, kept flexing the rods at the point of contact with the cliff, and the section there would become red hot. It was daredevil work. 2 rods had already broken, and only safety lines had saved Scots from plummeting 1,000 feet to their deaths. 2 months' work in bitter and ferocious winds, and they had only a few pounds of wire gold to show for it. Gold grabbed, as it were, on the fly. This was the 5th night he had lain here and looked in vain for the fire that should be there. 5 nights before, not seeing the fire, they had sent a scout. There had been a row with the council and the others when they found he was determined to slip down there himself. They had literally barred the door on him. Robert the Fox had become cross with him and shouted into his ears that chiefs didn't scout. They might raid, but never scout. It was too dangerous for him. He was not expendable. He had argued and found the rest of the council taking Robert's side. And when other Scots heard the raised voices, they came and stood around the council, as they had a right to do, they said, and added their arguments against his taking senseless risks with his person.